I'm here with JP, a very interesting person I've met last week. And I was like, no, we got to do something together. So here we are. And I'm not going to introduce JP. JP, I'll let him do the introduction. So here is JP.
Hey, good morning, everyone. Carl, thank you so much for inviting me to the show. My name is JP Van Stertiem, and I'm currently a Focal Point business and executive. How I got to this point is a long story, but I don't know if this is a good time to get into that, Carl.
let's try to get the short version.
Where did
your name originate from? What were you born?
Yeah, exactly, right? So JP stands for Jean-Pierre, which is a French-sounding first name, right?
But
Van Stertiem sounds a little Dutch.
Yes.
So I'm from a country that's right in between France and the Netherlands.
And that is?
Carl.
Yes.
That is. You should know Carl.
Would it be Belgium?
That is Belgium, yes. And what is Belgium known for?
The home of the French fry.
Exactly. French fries originated in Belgium, not in France. Right? But Belgium is also known for?
Well, it's second to beer.
Yes. Well, second to beer. All right. I know you're a little...
Yes, definitely.
But we're definitely known for beer. I think we have over 1,000 microbreweries in Belgium.
Oh, definitely. No, Belgium is beautiful. And
right.
Generally, Belgians, except for Stella Artois, of course, that's the only Pilsner-style beer. But otherwise, Belgians have very exclusive ales.
Yes, absolutely.
That's the number one thing about Belgium is the ales. Not even the beer, but the ales. The ales, are very good and very dangerous because they get like 9, 10, 11, 12% alcohol.
Yes, you got to know how to pace yourself. Otherwise, you get in trouble.
That's why us simple Czechs, we just like our 4.4% alcohol beer. And
would you call that beer?
You could keep it steady and drinking and, you know, having a good time instead of coffee.
Okay. Well, it's interesting to learn that you call that beer. That's more like water, though, right? But anyway.
No, it's actually the original Pilsner.
Okay.
Pilsner account.
That is a great Pilsner, by the way. It's one of the best in the world.
Yeah, it is. Well, it is what gave the beer style its name. I mean, that's what Stella Artois is based on.
Yeah. Okay. We'll go for that right now.
Yeah. But the heavy ales, I think it was in your case, it was Golden Drak.
The Golden Drak. Yeah. You also have Duvel, Delirium Tremens, and quite a few others. Yes, yeah, absolutely.
You take a couple of sips and it happened to me one time. I was like, I was sipping it. And I was like, trying to stand up from the table. And I was like, oh, wow.
Oops.
Longer than I thought.
Sit back down. Sit back down. Have another one. Anyway,
out of Belgium, how did you end up here?
Yeah. So, you know, I grew up, about 10 miles from the Dutch border in Antwerp. And, I went to college and graduated with a degree in electronics engineering, master's in electronics engineering, got into, product development with a company called DE, did that for a number of years. And then, I decided, I got to get into sales. I'm not really into all the details that are required to be a good engineer. And I wanted to make more money, got into sales, joined a company called, joined their European headquarters. And at some point they asked me, hey, are you, kind of willing to join us in the United States at our world headquarters? Because we need someone with your expertise to help launch a product internationally. And I said, that sounds like a great idea. And I just did that. And I'm still here in the United States. I met my wife, I have a family here, and right now I'm a naturalized US citizen. And, I spent over 22 years with Cisco Systems in the sales engineering and, had global responsibilities as well as domestic responsibilities. Spent about 3.5 years at Dell Technologies as a field CTO. And then 2 years ago, I basically quit corporate life and started my own business as a business and executive coach, got my certification through Focal Point, and here I am, looking forward to help business owners and executives at enterprises helping them become more successful, you know, grow their business, grow their careers, and make sure that at the same time they work-life balance.
Yeah, that's for me, work-life balance is sort of the utopia of.
Well, it for many people. For many people, it is.
How would you define work-life balance? What is your definition of it?
So my definition is the following: is that, you know, you are very successful in your business, but you manage your business in such a way that you have the time to spend with your family, the time to spend with your friends, and, you know, the time to spend on your hobbies. Because, you know, at the end of your life, you're going to look back and say, you know what, you're not going to say, I wish I was harder. You're probably going to think like, I wish I spent more time with my family. I wish I spent more time doing the things I really love doing. Right.
What is your recommendation on the balance? How do you like in your coaching? What do you say? What is the amount of time? I mean, like, you know, something a little bit more specific or concrete, let's say.
Yeah, well, I think balance is is an individual thing, right? It's different for everybody. But the way you got to go about it is that you got to look at your business, and you got to it's got to start with a plan. You got to have a clear, you know, vision of where you want to be from a career perspective, and at the same time from a personal perspective too. You got to have that first of all, and then you got to figure out, okay, you know what, if this is my goal X number of years in the future, right, how am I going to get there? So determine where you're at right now, and then basically create a plan on how to get there, how to achieve, you know, all your career objective and all your personal objectives, whether it's financial, health-wise, family-wise, you name it, right? So it start off with creating a goal.
And what would you say the limit of weekly work is? Hours?
Oh, I think that once you go beyond 50 hours a week, then you become less and less productive. I think many people spend too much time at work because they're very bad at time management. You know, it's like, you know, you set your goals, then it's really important to prioritize your activities, right? And managing your time. And actually, you know, you don't manage time. Time is the same for everybody. The only thing you can manage is what you work on, right? So you got to set the right priorities. And when you do that the right way, then, you know, you make time available to do the things that, you know, matter to you from a personal perspective as well.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, 50 hours sounds about right. Because once you start doing, you could do short runs of bursts of doing more than 8 hours a day for sure. But, you know, then beyond that, you're going to start hitting roadblocks, mental roadblocks.
Right. Life. And I'm not saying that, you know, once you hit 50 hours that it's like, okay, turn off my laptop and everything like that, not picking up the phone anymore. Of course, there will be days, maybe weeks, where you'll have to put in more time. It depends on some of the, you know, your business priorities as well, right? So you gotta be, there's gotta be flexibility there, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's why I said it. That's why I sort of called the work-life sort of a utopia. Because I don't think if you work too hard, you feel bad that you're sort of omitting the personal life. But then when you, again, slow down on the work, you sort of have feeling of like, I'm not putting enough time. So it's like, you're never going to be happy no matter what you do. You're like, well, maybe I should do some more work.
Well, it's not about the amount of time you put in. It's about, did I achieve my objective of the? It's about the goals. Is that, did I do what I say I was going to do? And once you did that, you know, if it's like 3 p.m. on a Friday, you say, you know what? I did everything I said I was going to do this week.
Yeah.
I quit. I mean, I'm going to stop working for the week. I'm going to enjoy my weekend early.
Sort of right? What I told my son, I told him, when you, like, you should set an objective to set 3 to 5 meetings a day, 3 being the minimum and 5 being the most. Like, just, you know, because His starting of business for him right now at his age, at the 19, he's like, he's got to meet a lot of people. And I says, well, you know, just make sure you set up 3 to 5 meetings a day. And that's basically your objective. You do other stuff, of course, but this is your main objective. But when you have 5, you're good and you should be happy. And because you feel happy or accomplished, then it's probably easier for you to quit working that day because you already had right. that sense of accomplishment. So
yes,
but yeah, that's an example of what I just did a couple of weeks ago with my son. I said, 3 to 5 meetings. Not you have to do them. You just have to set them for the future. And as long as you have that, that gives you the numbers because then eventually you're going to be having the 3 to 5 meetings. But you know, they could be on a Saturday. For him being a student, he's got a lot of time off, so he can spend the time meeting people on weekends. While he's in school, of course, it's a bit more difficult. But yeah, that's definitely time management is the very elusive thing. And like you said, it's everybody's got 24 hours. It's just how you manage it. And if you spend 6 hours doing Netflix, that takes away from a lot of things. Binge watching.
It absolutely does. Absolutely does. Yes. You know, and you know, when it comes to managing your day, right? It's like not just looking at your work hours, but the hours you don't spend at work. You know, having a sleep, important, right? Working out, very important as well, right? Spending time with your family, and especially when you have a growing family, very important as well. So you got to make time for all these things. They're all very important. And that is what it's all about. The balance is all about, right?
Yeah. So, and it's not specifically each per minute, how much you spend on each. It's about, like you said, setting certain goals and sort of making it all work together. And then again, you only have that 24-hour clock, and how do you squeeze that in, all of it, you know? And then there's something you just don't have time for one thing, but you have to make time. You have to make up for it later in the week.
Yeah.
And I said, we wrote down a couple of topics, and they were in a description. And it was this first one, you know, and this is from your experience now, since you've been not only from the coaching experience, but from your past history, is how do you see the change in today's workforce? How do you perceive it, the development of the skills that people need to help a business grow? I mean, you know.
Yeah, that's a good. I like to start off by bringing up concept, Carl. Have you ever heard of Carnegie Triangle?
The triangle, I'm not sure. Carnegie, I know, but the triangle, go ahead.
Yeah, so the Carnegie Foundation, I believe, did a study of, determining what are the most important skills that kind of predict success in business. Mm-hmm. Okay. And, I thought it's very interesting because this is something everybody that is in business really should take into account. You know, when you hire someone, for example, you hire someone for your business that has a certain amount of knowledge required to be successful in the role, right? And then you also expect that person to have a skill, which the skill is really, you know, being able to apply that knowledge that the person has into the role, into the job, okay? And so these are two requirements. And then the third one, the third leg of the triangle, let's say, I'm not going to mention that one. I'm going to ask you, you know, when you look at accounts, when you look at success, right, what are the characteristics that are the most important to be successful? So I mentioned knowledge and skill, right? So for how much of success does that account for? A combination of skills and knowledge. That's a question for you, Carl.
I would say, I may surprise you on this. I think it's only about, not even half. I would say it's probably 30%, because I think the rest of it is about your motivation.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, not bad. It actually accounts for only 15%.
There you go. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And the remaining 85%, you know what that is?
Would be your motivation, your sense of achievement, purpose, or, you know, why you want to even do it. Like, why do you wake up in the morning? You know, like,
it's attitude.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Can do attitude, right? Yeah. It's like someone with the right attitude will do whatever it takes to be successful in the role, right? Yeah.
And the motivation for that is what I'm saying is like sort of having a goal, dream, objective. You want to have something to work towards, and that if as long as you have that, you set that, I think you do have, you'll then be, it'll be easier for you to do the rest of the work that's required, and you won't see it as a pain to overcome or an obstacle.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's more than just having a goal and a vision. It's like, having the positive attitude to do whatever it takes to be successful, to reach that goal and vision, right? And in my past career, I've hired quite a few into organizations. And I always hired attitude, having, it's so important to build that team culture, people with the right attitude in the organization. More important than skills and knowledge. Absolutely. When I read a resume that had a list of certifications, like a mile doesn't guarantee success. I will
No.
always look for attitude.
Yeah,
And it
absolutely.
always, like, every single time it, the outcome was very positive.
Yeah, it's definitely attitude is definitely part of that. And like I said, the way I help sort of set the attitude right is you help people by telling them like, listen, this is really studying what you want to achieve and helping them get what they want, and then they'll do a lot more for you.
Yeah,
Sort
and absolutely. And then also, with the right attitude, right? Your attitude is the only thing you control. The way you deal with change, right, is going to be determined by your attitude. And change is the only constant in life and in business for sure,
Yep.
right?
Absolutely.
Very important.
Yeah, no, I mean the world is ever changing and stuff, and I think a lot of the youngest generation, they're missing sort of a sense of purpose, I would say, because they get everything sort of at their fingertips. Like I always say, like when we want to read a good book, we had to go to the library. When we wanted to watch a movie, you had to go out and get the videotape at least from the video store. I mean, the generation before us, they just had to search through the TV guide and wait for it to be on TV on the two channels that you had. But today it's kind of like, for us, we had to at least walk to the video store. Although we had all the movies at our fingertips, we had to walk to the video store. But today people just, they grab the phone and they're like, oh, what movie do I want to watch? I got 2 million movies to choose from. And I think that loses a lot of the will to strive for something to achieve, because it's like, well, I'll just hit the button 3 times and I got everything I want.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too hard on them though, Carl. It's times change. Technology changes everything, right? It's like, our kids grow up, have grown up, capabilities and technologies that we couldn't even dream of when we grew up,
Well,
right?
I was
And
dreaming of them, I just didn't have them.
well, that's another thing. That's another thing. But it's like it also, enables a lot of things, and it creates so many more possibilities for the younger generations. And being able to marshal those in a way that, helps them be successful at life, at work, at balancing work and life, they're going to be doing this in a different way from earlier generations, like we did it differently from our previous generations as well. So it's evolution,
It is,
right?
it is. It's just I'm thinking, is life has finally become too easy to really motivate people to get out of the bed?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think so because think about it, think about social media, right? And all the great things that social media enables, but at the same time also all the bad things. And sometimes you get up and you get bombarded by all these messages, negative messages, and so on and so forth. It's like, how do you deal with that? So these are challenges that we didn't have when we grew up because we didn't have social media. It's like if we were lucky, we watched like for 30 minutes, we watched the news at night. Now you have 24/7 news channels. Now you have social media. We get bombarded every 5 minutes. We get an update, right? And it's like information overflow. So it's a challenge. Information overflow is a challenge.
It
And then
is.
you gotta, figure out, okay, well, what is real? What is fake?
And
So it's like,
I even read a study on this, and it's actually the information overflow is causing problems unforeseen to this point yet. So when the younger generation comes out, they don't have the will, the go-getter attitude sort of type thing, but they do have an issue sorting through all this massive information. And how to get through that is just, that's a new issue for them totally for this next generation, because they got everything. Right. But I think that the go-getter attitude is kind of taken out of it, but they do struggle with that too much information. So I'm thinking at some point, how do we sort of filter out the BS?
Yeah, absolutely. So trust me, they'll figure out a way to do it.
Yeah, they'll have to. Because like
every generation went through that in their own way. I believe that they'll figure it as well.
Yeah, and then, and that takes me to the next one is, what kind of skill sets should people be work on today to become leaders? In business, of course, entrepreneurial leaders. The number one skill or skill set that they should have to become leaders in today's, what we just described, the overflow of stuff is just, you know.
Yeah.
What is the number one skill? It's a tough one, I know.
Yeah, well, I think there's a number of answers to it. So the first one is communications. As a leader, you're always selling. You're creating a vision, you're selling a vision, which means that you got to be able to, communicate that effectively to your people, followers. That is a top skill. The other one is, when you want to become a leader in business and actually in life, it's really important to, think about how you develop your people, how you develop your people in such a way that they learn how to do their own problems, right? Which means that, you got to become somewhat of a coaching leader, not doing things for your people, but teaching how to your people so they can solve their own problems. I think that's a very important skill set for a leader with long-term impact. Because if you just, if you're, let's say you're a new in a, and you've never managed before, and one of your new employees comes to you and with a challenge, with a problem, and how to solve the problem, and you decide, okay, you know what, I'm going to solve this problem for you, Mr. Employee. Well, you get a quick result, but you didn't teach your employee anything, right? So what you taught the employee is that next time the employee has a problem, that employee is going to come to you and you're going to solve the problem for the employee. So maybe it's a lot better to basically, coach the employee and, kind of ask questions of the employee about the problem and have the employee come up with their own solution to the problem. And what you develop at that point in time is you develop the potential in the employee, right? And the employee now becomes the one who knows how to solve the problems. And you as the leader are now able to focus on the things that a leader really should be focusing on, which is long-term. So you achieve two things. One is that you as a leader, you're focused on, strategy, vision, mission, etc. And then your employee has grown as well, because they learned an important skill set, on how to solve their own problems, right? It's a long-term approach to the business.
Yeah, nothing great happens overnight, right? And it takes multiple people to always develop something. It's like, that's the other topic that we didn't even write about, but I'm like, I believe, and at least I was in a generation where everybody wanted to be independent and work on their own, and I'm in a business for myself, by myself, I'm alone, I'm a solopreneur, right? That's the word for it, encompassing total. But it was always taught like, oh yeah, you want to be a solopreneur because you can have all this freedom and stuff. But especially today, I think solopreneurship is just dead. I mean, you can't do anything on your own. I don't think that it's even possible. I mean, just.
Solopreneurship is basically, you got to build a network of, let's say, quote unquote, that you can work with, you can rely on to offer the services that you need to help your, you know, to help your clients become successful, right? It's like you're a web designer, a web developer. Well, I, you know, if I'm a marketing person and I'm working with a client who wants to redesign their website, I would come to you to do that, right? Yeah. So you got to have a network of people that help you, you know, in your business, making your clients successful. So yeah. I may depend on marketing experts. I may depend on web designers. I may depend on, you know, financial experts and so on and so forth. But I should be able to tap into that expertise at the right time for the right problem, right? That is the key. So you're still a solopreneur, but now you work with a bunch of, with an ecosystem of partners to, you know, help your clients.
Which basically, but then, and then the important part is that the ecosystem is something that you rely on and you would not function without, which sort of takes away the idea of solopreneur, because, you know, solopreneur in my mind sort of is more of a self-sustaining person that has the ability to operate on its own. But the problem is you don't operate on it. So on your own, you operate within a, like you said, the ecosystem. So it's sort of like a ecosystem of solopreneurs, which then basically becomes a full service that you're offering. So it's sort of like that solopreneurship is taken out of that, especially today, because things are getting very complicated. And I mean, just web design has subdivided in its time over the last 15 years, 20 years into like 5-6 different fields.
Yeah.
So just the web design is not just one person can't do it all anymore.
No, you can't.
I can't think of any service that you can really do on your own without the support of so many other, you know, that ecosystem that you got to build. And at that point, you're basically building a company, just not paying the people directly, but you're just sort of cooperating. And, you know, that's the globalization of the world. I mean, you've got partners that you could hook up with all across the globe, but you need the partners because you can't, you know, one man. Absolutely. You know, the Don Quixote syndrome where you fight the windmills, it's not, that doesn't work anymore.
No, absolutely. Everything is interconnected.
Yeah. So I was like, it was an interesting idea. And let's get to the next one is like with this also in mind, and this is the part is like most companies always have been trying to hire, recruit young talents and stuff. But now, I mean, you spoke about that before, a couple of weeks ago, whatever, in that how difficult it is to operate a company with just having, like, let's say young recruits, that you got to have a good mix, and, you know, you need young, middle age, older age, all sorts of ages and phases. And then you got to, and then the trick becomes is you got to make them work together. How do you handle that?
Well, again, it's all about, you know, making sure everybody has the right communication skills to be successful. It's like, you know, you got to, you know, what the behaviors, the different behaviors of the different people in the organization, regardless of their ages, right? You got to be able to understand, well, you know, this kind of person, based on, you know, the behavior style that I can identify, needs to be communicated with in a different way than this other person. And something we do in coaching is we run behavior assessments, this style, types of assessments, where we basically learn not only how we like it, right, but also be able to identify how others like to behave and communicate, and so that we are able to adapt our communication style to them. Because I'll tell you something, okay, in communication, all right, the words you use for how much you think are they, in a conversation, the words you use, what you say, how important is that?
I mean, my background is in linguistics because I speak 7 languages, and I go into a country and I learn the language in 2 to 3 weeks, and I can communicate with the local people. And this is why I do it, is because exactly the question you asked is the fact that words do matter a lot. And putting a spin and say, well, I meant it differently and blah, 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 that just doesn't fly, because no matter what you say, it's got an impact. It carries, every single word carries a certain intonation, even if, no matter how you say it, just the word in and of itself. evokes a feeling in somebody else. So, I mean, and me just writing a lot of content, and this is where I run into a lot of problems with the AI, for example, which people don't notice, is I notice the deviations in the words. I'm like, I write something and I say, let the AI take a look at it and fix it. And it's kind of like the AI puts in different words. And I'm like, I feel like when the AI does it, it lost my meaning. The AI does not understand what I'm trying to convey. So words are very much do matter. And this is why I'm like, use AI, but don't overuse it.
So in any verbal communication, right? Let's say you're talking, you're presenting, you're having a conversation with your team, with your employee. So there's what you say and how you say it. You touched upon those two things already. So what you say is only 7% of what the recipient remembers. How you say it, right? Pace, volume, emotion, right? 55% of what a person. And then the nonverbal stuff, like, gestures and stuff like that, how you stand, your posture, 38%. So 7% is what you say. Many people, when they focus on, delivering a presentation or, they focus on what you say. 7%. That's, if you communicate, there's another thing, right? If you communicate to everyone in a way, you could lose 75% of the opportunities. And for example, when you're in sales, that's bad. The best salespeople, intuitively, they understand how to adjust the way they communicate to their potential buyer. They do that intuitively. Many other people, not so intuitively. They need to have, they need a little bit of help. And that's where behavior assessments can come into play, right? Where they better understand, hey, this is my style. I'm a numbers guy. I'm analytic. I like to throw out facts. But this other guy or gal is like more of, an influencer, more someone who likes to communicate, an extroverted person who's less interested in facts and data. Well, I need to communicate differently to that person. Otherwise, everything I say will go like, won't stick, right? And so I mentioned sellers, but everybody is in sales.
You're always selling.
You're always selling something. You're selling yourself. You're selling an idea. You're selling a vision, selling a product, So that's very important, a success factor in business, regardless of, generations and differences in generation and stuff like that. I think, when it comes to having different age groups in business, there will slightly be, there will be different attitudes and stuff like that. But the key is to make everybody work together. And one way to do that is by having more effective communications and really create a breakthrough in communication to improve team culture and team communication and team collaboration. It's key.
Yeah, definitely. And what you're talking about with the attitudes and stuff, it's interesting because I'm personally an introvert. I don't need to see people for a week. And but then when I go out and when I interact with people are like, oh, you're such a fun person to hang around with. And then you seem to be so open and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, but I only have to do that to get along with you people.
But the thing is,
it's kind of like, otherwise you don't sell.
Yeah. But you don't do it all the time, all the time like that. You need to have your time kind of, by yourself to kind of reflect and chill and do the things you like to do, which may be like introvert types of things like read and do whatever you're doing, develop a website.
Even the content creation, when I do that, I'll write stuff and watch some, football on TV, not American football, just
right. Football. Yeah. Yes.
Watched the Europa League yesterday, by the way. So that was
okay. You did. Okay.
And you guys did pretty good.
I don't know. I didn't follow. So what happened yesterday?
Well, Brugge, they beat, they, they, beat somebody. I forget who it was.
Well, hopefully they beat somebody important.
I'll check it out right now. Actually, I'll give you the update. Yeah. Because there was too many scores. I just watched the Pilsen with Inter Milan, and that
okay.
They lost at the end, but they were. It was Inter Milan. But anyway, let me see. I got the football here. I gotta go to yesterday. Because I have the camera on and stuff, it's a little bit slower. No. It's just my computer. When I do live streams, I did. No, actually, they did bad. I thought they did good, but they did bad. They lost to the Polish Jagiellonia, but I thought
it was. I'm sorry. I feel bad. I feel bad. You mentioned that right now.
Oh yeah, I thought they actually did good, and they surprised me. That's what I remembered. I didn't know they surprised me in the fact that they lost so much to Jagiellonia.
Okay, well, let's move on to another topic then.
Let's go to another topic, exactly. But my next question to you, or the topic that I wrote down here, that's basically the last one on the list besides the other stuff that we said we're going to get into, is what would you say within a company? What would each generation be best fit for between the millennials, the Z's, and the boomers, et cetera, et cetera? I mean, what is each of those generations? What are their benefits that they would bring to your company? Why would you hire a boomer?
That in itself, would justify a different, separate research project and stuff like that.
Whole other hour of
I would say and my answer is not gonna be what you like to hear, but I'm gonna come back to what I already said. You gotta hire the right people for the right, okay? And for some jobs you're gonna require a certain amount of knowledge that may only be available, coming from a right. And then other jobs will require maybe a certain amount of knowledge, less you could go to a junior, right? But I think, the most important thing is hiring for attitude. Right, making sure at any time is like, whether it's boomer or Gen Z, whatever, it's like, hire for attitude, because that's 85% of, your going forward. That would be my answer to that, Carl.
Okay. I was thinking like, what kind of positions within the company, maybe more specifically, like an advisory or, management, or how would they, and then the collaboration, because what I'm trying to get to is also the collaboration between them is like kind of, you have the old generation, and this is between, like, this is the talk that's some, people are very opinionated. And so it's kind of like the old generation says, well, the youngest generation always says that this is a terrible, it's the worst generation. It's like, we had it bad, but they have it. But how do you then bring them together? How do you make the old generation realize that the young generation can be thought, trained, and how do you teach the young generation to respect the old generation? Because of course the young generation is full of vigor and like, yeah, we're going to dominate the world. And for us experienced people, we're like, well, we'll talk in another 5 to 10 years, we'll see how you do on that domination thing. We've been there, done that and stuff. So it's kind of like, how do you figure it out? How do you explain it to them that they, hey, listen, this is your thing, use it, utilize it, run with it, but also take into account the experience from the other generation that tells you, and then sort of kind of find the middle ground, utilize it for the best growth, is to take the best from each of the groups, sort of?
Well, I think we spoke about it briefly, is that, in my opinion, change is the only constant in business and in life. And, having different generations inside of the workforce is one aspect of change that people need to learn how to deal with. And in my opinion, it all comes down to attitude, but it also comes down to, having the right leadership to kind of, create the vision and instill in people, instill in the employees that, times are changing. The workforce is diverse. Everybody needs to understand that, and everybody needs to be able and willing to work in that kind of a changed environment. And everybody has a choice to adapt or not, right? It's like, if you have trouble working, for example, for as a boomer for a manager that is like a gen whatever, right?
Yeah.
If you have trouble working for someone like that, you know, it really depends. I mean, people in younger generations can be really good at leading older people, right? So but if you as a boomer are working for a Gen Zer and, you know, for maybe valid reasons you don't feel comfortable, yeah, then it's, you know, probably time to think about doing something different, you know, looking for a different position inside of the same organization or outside of the organization, or adapt. I mean, you know, the thing is, it's all about attitude. The only thing you control in life is attitude. It's not what happens to you, but your attitude on how you deal with change and stuff like that.
And what would be your advice to a young manager managing older people?
Oh, that is, you know, again, it's like understanding that that has been in an organization or has probably many, many more years of experience, right? Is learn how to use that experience to your advantage as a manager, right? So it's like, hey, I got to respect this person. This person has been here in the company for like 20 years, has gone through a lot, has a lot of experience. And, you know, I got to use that to my advantage, not only for my organization's advantage, but for my own advantage as well, because I can learn a lot from this individual. And vice versa, the boomer can probably learn a lot from the Gen Zer, because that happens a lot as well. It's called reverse mentoring, right? It's like a boomer who is maybe not as technical as he or she should be could learn from a Gen Zer about newer technologies and how to apply that in their jobs and how to become better in their jobs. So you got to, you know, on both sides, you got to be open to things. You have to have the right attitude. Again, it always comes down to attitude in my book, it seems.
Yeah, no, dude. And I agree with that. And that's why we sort of, you know, agreed on a lot of things in the meeting we had first time, and now same thing here. So
yeah,
that definitely is the way. And then if you reverse it now, like let's do the different role, the older managers that are trying to instill the old ways into the younger generation, what would you tell that guy? Like, you know, the boomer that's the CEO and he says, no, back in my day, we used to do things this way and this is the only way you do it. And of course, the Gen Zs, they're like, you know, oh, we're not really, you know, and there's a big,
yeah, again, you know, if that is the case, yeah, and you know, if that is the case, if you are a boomer in a leadership position and you're not able to work with younger generations, you're in the wrong role. Okay, that's basically it, because if you stay too long in that role with that kind of an attitude, you're going to create a bad team culture, which is going to have a negative impact on performance. So, and indirectly, you're going to jeopardize your career future. So it's like, again, all comes down to attitude. You got to be able to work with people from different generations, be able to communicate with them. You got to be able to coach them so they become successful in their roles and future careers. And, you know, again, it comes all down to attitude. And yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, I got to give you a heads up. I got to jump very quickly because I have an upcoming call.
You got like 2-3 minutes left or something. I know.
Yeah.
You just say goodbye and you disappear and I'll close up.
Well, I don't want to disappear like that, Carl. I want to say, you know.
I just, but my last thing, and basically it's more of an assessment, is generally it all comes down to communication, and it all comes down to the attitude and being open-minded. And to me, it seems lately it's been more and more difficult because of the bigger gaps. And the bigger gaps is not just because age, you know, time flows the same. So it's 10, 15 different years. However, if you look at the advancements in especially tech over the last 10 years, those advancements have been accelerating at a rapid rate. So like the computers that we started on and the abilities, the technology was at the time, I think the advancements have been so huge between, let's say, like, between say 1980 to 2000, was certain development, and of course that will create a different obstacles and stuff. And then from 2000 to 2020, let's say the other next 20 years, there's a huge gap in technology. I mean, it created a gap. So I think that's the most challenging these days, is the fact that the technology moves so fast that you're like in the Stone Ages, if you were in the 20 years ago.
True.
And to grab that is very difficult. I think that is the biggest challenge that we have, is the speed, the acceleration of the advancements that people in 20 years won't even understand the technology 20 years ago. Now it's like just, oh yeah, we're still using phones, we'll still use this, but it's so much different. And so I think that's part of that team communication within a company that is difficult and becoming more and more difficult to manage.
Yeah. No, I mean, technology is going to continue to evolve, and it's going to bring huge advantages. I think people will become more and more productive. People will be able to focus on those things that, let's say, are more strategic, right? And that's going to continue to be that way. And people are going to have to learn how to use technology to their advantage. I think it won't be too much of a problem. Listen, you know, who would have, like, 30 years ago, we would be talking like this. And oh, by the way, it's not just talking, it's emailing, it's texting, it's like, you know, web surfing, et cetera, et cetera. So, and nobody has a problem with this. I mean, yeah, some people that are a little bit more technically challenged may have some, you know, trouble with, you know, downloading applications and getting applications to work the right way. In big scheme of things, you know, it's not a big deal. And I think that, you know, 30 years from now, we'll be, I don't know what we'll be doing. Maybe we'll be, you know, transmitting information, just brainwaves, communicating through brainwaves. Who knows?
Yeah, definitely. No, we're coming up on the top of the hour.
So. Yeah, I got to run.
So thank you for being here, and it was fun talking to you. And
yeah, thanks for having me. I enjoyed the conversation, and I wish you a great end of the week and an even better weekend coming up. Hopefully you're not working, okay? Hopefully you take some time off and do the stuff you enjoy doing.
Get the beer.
Hey, that's one way of doing it. All right.
Thanks for having me, and thanks for being here, and I'll be talking to you. Good luck.
All right. Sounds good, Carl. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so that was JP. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. I just want to wrap it up here a little bit, but he had to go, had a meeting. We're all busy. I got to go too. That's why I started late, because I came in later. But I think it was a very good conversation, and maybe we'll continue on some of the subtopics in the future. And, so 1 hour is never enough. I mean, I do my beer-a-thons on the Saturdays, and I can talk for hours and hours and hours. But anyway, so thank you for being here. I saw a bunch of people were there live, and then we get other people watching us on YouTube. So check this out on LinkedIn or on Global Productions YouTube channel, and I'll see you next Friday again. Have a good one. Bye-bye.